High in the air. Brito back at the wall. Adios, Pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy. They're going to get accountability. They're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another. And I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 170 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy Baggerly. Andy, oh God, first off, I'm going to barf. Second, who do you think is tied for 170th all time in Giants home runs?
Let's see. Is it Darren Ruff? I don't know. Is it Buster Posey? Is it Wilmer? I'm just going to go and read every name on the 2021 roster because it's probably one of those guys.
It's late night Lamont Wade Jr. Ooh, 170th all-time in home runs. He's tied with Michael Tucker, Sean Dunstan, Charlie Hayes, Royce Clayton, Ernie Riles, Reggie Smith, Jack Hyatt, Leon Wagner, and Jesus Alou, among others. And I think that's a good omen, personally. I think a late night Lamont walk-off, I think people would remember that tonight.
Yeah, I've given up on my pedantry of saying that it really should be late game Lamont because he's hit a couple big hits in the late innings of day games, including the one in Oakland. So, yeah, but late night Lamont just sounds so good. So I've given up. I've given in. And late night Lamont it is. And hey, whether it's late night Lamont or late night Wilmer, it doesn't have the same ring maybe, but the Giants would take it from anybody at this point.
Yeah, no. But first off, not liking late night Lamont is disrespectful to the people in Moscow and Finland because it's night there when he does some of that late day stuff. So it's always right. Late night somewhere. But yes, it is. Look, the Giants don't care if they get a home run from late night Lamont or if they get a pinch hit home run from Alex Wood. They just, I'm going to say it, they kind of just want to win this game. They want to win game 5 of the NLDS by any means necessary. They will take a blown call from Angel Hernandez. They'll take anything.
Right. You know what? There's some sort of specific feeling going into a game like this where you just know, no matter what happens, no matter who wins, no matter who loses, no matter who has is the hero or the goat, you know, this is going to be a game that's going to be kind of imprinted on the consciousness of fans of both teams for a long, long time. You know, maybe it's going to be more forgettable for one side than the other, but it won't be easily forgettable. And just knowing that going in, I mean, that's what makes the buildup and the anticipation so much fun.
You're going to be able to reference this game, the shorthand of it, for decades. You will have a kid who is born in 2032 who, like, will know, oh yeah, that was game 5. Yeah, I understand that reference. It's going to transcend generations. It's going to be just one of those things. Like, I wasn't around when Willie Mays hit 4 home runs. I know about it. And Giants fans in the future are going to know about this game regardless of what happens. And they'll know some of the names, the particulars, what goes on. Gosh, I don't know. I'm freaking out.
Yeah, I mean, you could even go back to like 1962 when the Dodgers and Giants played their 3-game series to determine who would win the pennant. And that series was determined in the most like non-dramatic way ever. Well, kind of dramatic because the Giants had to score a bunch of runs in the ninth to win. But it was a walk-off walk. You know, I mean, it was not Travis Ishikawa. It was Jim Davenport drawing a walk. But I mean, it changed the lives of a lot of people, including the Dodgers pitcher who walked him. He felt like he was ostracized from the team for the rest of his life. It's one of those games that is going to change people's lives.
Yeah, it changed Charles Schulz's life. I mean, you know, it changed my life after I was born because I'm reading those Peanut comics. And it's like, I got to figure out what he's talking about with McCovey and 3 feet higher. It is setting up it in the best possible way in that you have Julio Urias, who is like a final boss on the Dodgers pitching staff. You have Logan Webb going for the Giants. He's a little bit of a final boss to the Dodgers. It's setting up very, very well for both sides. I do like that Kevin Gausman is available on full rest for whatever the Giants need. Maybe Gausman can help.
Well, and the flip side is, even though Dave Roberts kind of downplayed it, you know, Max Scherzer is just an absolute bug-eyed beast of a human being, and he's going to make himself available as well. And he's done this before, so it's going to be, both teams are going to be fully loaded. Basically, they're going to throw everything at this game, And, you know, the Braves are probably hoping that they play, you know, 25 innings and tucker themselves out as they await, you know, which California city they fly to start the NLCS. But, yeah, it's going to be – wait, actually, do I have that right? Would the Braves open at home because the Dodgers are the wild card? I'm not sure how that works, actually, to be honest.
They would open at home because the Dodgers are the wild card. That is correct.
All right. Thank you. I corrected myself in time. But, yeah, I think they got to get off to a clean start against Logan Webb. And I thought your article was just tremendous, especially it's probably the best piece of baseball analysis ever typed out by someone with a broken elbow. And with all of the pitches that you grabbed to show that, you know, this is not an impenetrable Dodgers staff. I mean, they're tremendously talented. There's a reason they are where they are, but it's not like there have been no pitches for the Giants to hit. It's not like there is a reason or some sort of cosmic force or just perfectly scouted, executed plan why, you know, so many of their hitters are hitless in this series. I mean, there are pitches out there for them to hit, and their track record is that they will hit those pitches eventually. So, you know, it's kind of the least analytical thing in the world to say they're due, but they kind of are, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you picked up on that, because I was writing it, and as I was writing, I was like, oh gosh, is this, you know, am I making, like, is anyone going to understand what I'm trying to say here? So I'm glad that you accurately described what I was trying to say. I went into that trying to see, look, are the Dodgers just executing brilliantly? Because I kind of thought that must be the answer, that the Dodgers are just hitting their spots over and over again, and it's just not going to work out if they keep doing that. And I found that, you know, Darren Ruff is getting pitched really tough, you know, he's up in the zone with the fastballs. The sliders are right where they need to be. They are pitching Ruff tough. But, like, they're not pitching Flores especially tough, and he's having decent at-bats. And they're not pitching Donovan Solano tough, and he's having decent at-bats. So you can believe that the Giants just forgot how to hit, or in the case of Evan Longoria, that, you know, that there's something physically wrong with him. Or you can say they should probably hit some of these pitches more so than they have been hitting. So 9 of the 13 position players on the roster, and I'm talking Yastrzemski, Flores, Ruff, Solano, Dickerson, Duggar, Longoria, Wade, and Casale, are 2 for 62. That's not sustainable. I don't care if you scrape up AAA players against the Dodgers, AA players against the Dodgers, maybe even single-A players against the Dodgers. You're not going to get 2 for 62 all the time.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? It does remind me a little bit. I went through and wrote a little capsule on each of the 10 elimination games that Buster Posey has caught in the postseason. And he has done quite well in them. The Giants are 9-1 in those games. Obviously, the exception being the 2016 NLDS loss to the Cubs. But, you know, it really reminds me a little bit of the series in Cincinnati. And that one, they had to obviously win 3 in a row on the road to escape. But they were just not hitting at all. I mean, at all in that series. I think they were batting like 126 in the first 3 games. And then Scudero started breaking out. Pablo started breaking out. And Pagan had the leadoff homer. And then Buster obviously had the grand slam off Matt Latos in 2012 in the clincher. So yeah, it took them a while, but they found a way to break out. And that Red staff was pretty good too. Not, I don't think anybody compares to what the Dodgers have. But, you know, sometimes it just takes a little while for that talent to show up. And I think that, you know, they're counting on the fact that that talent's going to show up in their home ballpark, you know, when they're going to have all the support in the world, when we've seen there haven't been very many Dodger fans in the crowd. They've been very, very Giants crowds. And, you know, they're going to hope that that momentum can carry them to the win they need to advance to the NLCS in a meeting of, I think this is the most wins combined between two teams in a playoff game ever. And that, I mean, that's pretty astounding. So, and it's kind of cool that every other DS resolved itself in 4 games, and leaving this one as really the only thing on the stage. So it's almost kind of like a World Series game, because all the attention in the baseball world is going to be on this game, as it should be. And so that's pretty cool too, to know that, you know, this is not just going to be a West Coast game for a West Coast audience. It's going to be all eyes on the Dodgers and Giants tonight.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Clear the runway for this game. Because it's like, if this were like a game between the Red Sox and Yankees, like I would, in similar situations with 107 versus 106 wins, I would clear my schedule for it. So I'm just glad that baseball gets to see this and baseball fans everywhere get to see it. I don't necessarily need the stress, and I would have preferred like an 11-1 Giants victory in game four, but all of us would have. Urias, he has been hit by the Giants this year. I know it feels like he has just been like a Clayton Kershaw to the Giants, but he has gotten hit around this year. And I started my article last night by, you know, trying to figure out what was different about it. But when I pulled up the heat maps on May 23rd, he pitched six solid innings, two earned runs, 10 strikeouts, no walks. And on May 29th, he pitched five innings, six earned runs. He was just off. In the heat maps for both starts, it's like one, the everything is up exactly where he wants it to be. On the game he got knocked around, it's right in the middle. And so, like, it was not good analysis to be like, if Urias throws the ball right down the middle, the Giants have a chance. But it's just a reminder that, look, he's not perfect, and maybe he can put it down the middle. And the time that the Giants got to him, it was when they had seen him in the same week. So maybe there's something there about the familiarity.
Yeah, there could be. I mean, you know, he's a guy who has just a great breaking ball and can spot his fastball. And he made the final out of the World Series last year. I mean, he's clearly a guy that is used to the big moment. I think it's all going to be up to which lineup can punch through against a pitcher that stymied them. And in a way, I think objectively, I would favor the Dodgers there because Logan Webb kind of already pulled his rabbit out of the hat. He threw 40 changeups in game one when the Dodgers were totally not expecting that. Now, it's great that he has three pretty elite pitches he can go to. I mean, it's not like he has to lean back on a sub elite offering by going a different way. But, you know, he's kind of already shown his element of surprise there. And the Dodgers are so good at adjusting that I think that we can probably expect that they'll make an adjustment to him and we'll see which way he adjusts back. With Urias, it's you know, he's a guy who hasn't had to really make an adjustment yet against the Giants, even though, as you said, they did get to him a little bit in that one start. So, you know, when I look at which lineup is capable of maybe making an adjustment, I think I probably would say the Dodgers. But if Logan Webb executes and hits his spots, then, you know, it may not matter. And if he does get into trouble early, then we're going to see them go to their bullpen. We're going to see them go to their pinch hitters early. It's just the way they've deployed their resources all year, and I wouldn't expect that would change. So the best thing they can do is just get a lead. Just get a lead early, any lead, and then try to hang on to it as best they can. And I would say whichever team scores first, I would fully expect is going to win this game.
Ugh, that is pressure. You know, I look at the Giants lineup that they can send out against Urias, and when he dominated them in Game 2, I wrote, like, look, the Giants are set up actually to face lefties well, where they can put so many right-handers in the lineup where you basically only have Brandon Crawford as your only left-handed bat. And every time I look at the lineup and the one that they can put out there that Chris Bryant can give them, and you have just you can have an all right-handed outfield, it makes me feel a little bit confident. And then I look at Urias' platoon splits, and 605 OPS to right-handers, 640 OPS to left-handers. He's just, there's no plan against him. You just have to hope he screws up, or you have to hope the Giants can beat some of the good pitches.
Yeah, you know, it only sets up well for the Giants, I think, in this regard, is you have your left-handed bats on the bench, your Dickersons, your Listellas, you know, your Wades, et cetera, et cetera. And so you know that the Dodgers only really have Alex Vesia, and I guess they have David Price too, but really just one sort of, you know, lefty, a guy who's tough on lefties in their bullpen. And so it probably works out better for them as they're deploying their pinch hitters for their pinch hitters to be from the left side against mostly right-handed Dodgers relievers. So in that sense, it does sort of set up better for them. Of course, they don't want to be trying to, you know, get back with heroics off their bench, even though they've won a lot of games that way. But at least I think having the lefties on their bench does set themselves up better to have matchups in the late innings, I would imagine.
If you are a Giants fan, are you rooting for the Giants to break through against Phil Bickford in the sixth inning because it's funny? Or in the ninth inning against Kenley Jansen because it's more exciting.
Right. I don't know. I don't think we're going to need to root for, oh, this outcome will be more exciting than this one. Every outcome is going to be exciting.
Oh my gosh.
But hey, Wilmer Flores has a big hit off Kenley Jansen this year. That could be a matchup to watch in the late innings. And you know what? I know the Giants were bummed that they didn't force Jansen to be used in game four. After Will Smith hit the two-run homer, Jansen sat back down, and then they used Bickford in the ninth. And they wanted to get a couple free looks at Kenley and have him, you know, break a sweat on the mound a little bit, even with the day off before Game 5. And they were bummed that didn't happen. And he's just been so good. I mean, ever since he had that wobble against the Giants earlier in the year, he's just been a different pitcher. And it's, you know, good for him, too, because the Dodger Stadium crowd booed him when he blew that game against the Giants earlier this season, and it kind of ticked everybody off in their clubhouse that their fans did that. And so I guess, you know, karmically, you know, I suppose Kenley, you know, saving the game would be something that maybe those fans don't deserve after booing him.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, if you're really mad about that clubhouse, I'll tell you what you can do to those fans. You can lose.
That's how you get them, Dodgers. That's how you get back at them. Just lose. Lose in spectacular smoking fashion.
What's wild about Jansen is that he's not just better. It's not like he reclaimed his old Jansen self. Like, he's different. He's not just this guy reliant on a magic cutter like he was. You know, he was almost like a modern-day analog to Mariano Rivera, where you knew what was coming, but you still couldn't mess with it because the movement was so unpredictable. Well, he's got, like, this curveball, and, like, he's setting up different, and it's all funky. So even if you're, like, Buster Posey or Brandon Crawford, this isn't the guy who's been going up against you for the last few years. It's that guy, plus he's got a new trick. That seems unfair.
Yeah. I mean, you know, credit to them. They turned their old visiting clubhouse into their analytics studio, and they've probably worked with him a ton on his pitch shapes, and they have a lot of technology, and they've yeah, here's a funny one. While I was going through all of the elimination games, do you remember who gave up or who threw the pitch that Hunter Pence, it broke his bat and he had the triple hit to clear the bases in the pennant clincher in 2012 against the Cardinals?
That's going to be someone with the Giants. Gosh, does Dominic Leone go back that far?
No, but Joe Kelly does.
Ah, there we go.
Joe Kelly was a rookie for the Cardinals in 2012 when he threw the pitch that broke Hunter Pence's bat, and it hit the bat three times as the barrel was decelerating, and Pete Cosma went one way, the ball went the other, and it was a little squeaky ground ball that turned into a three-run double, which was just the height of ridiculousness in that game, which ended in the rain, which ended in the Giants winning the pennant. And so Joe Kelly, yeah, he comes back around, and he's going to be in the Dodger bullpen today. You've got the last game that the Giants played, postseason game that they lost against the Cubs. The guy who started the rally was Chris Bryant in the ninth, and Chris Bryant is now a Giant and not a Cub. So, you know, some of these guys have kind of come back around in these elimination games on the other side. And it's just kind of funny to see how the cast of characters changes.
So let me get this straight. Your stat is that Buster Posey is 9-1 in Giants elimination games?
Yes, 9-1. If you would like the full litany, you've got the three games at Cincinnati in 2012. You've got the three games led by Rally Zito at St. Louis, and then at home, game 6 and 7 against St. Louis in 2012. Then, of course, you've got 2014, the wild card game at Pittsburgh. You've got game 7 of the World Series in 2014 at Kansas City. Madison Bumgarner had just a wee bit to do with them winning those games. And then you've got another Bumgarner shutout in the 2016 wild card game at the New York Metropolitans. And then finally, the only loss was to the Cubs in NLDS Game 4 in 2016.
Well, it's already been published, so I hate to tell you that you could have done this, but I think a better way to frame it is that with Chris Bryant and Buster Posey in a Giants elimination game. They have 10 combined wins. I think, how about that?
That's good. I should have done that. I should have done the math on that. But the funny thing is that Buster's only 6 for 38. I mean, he's like a .160 hitter in those games. And the only extra base hit is the one that you know off the top of your head. And but yet he's made an impact just by all of the receiving, all the catching, stealing, getting base runners, attempting to steal, just the leadership and the poise. And I think that they're going to be relying heavily on that again tonight.
I heard a stat, and I don't know the exact numbers, so forgive me for making this less exciting than it could be, but the Giants, since 2010, their overall record in the postseason is something goofy. It's like 37-13, or I mean, obviously, if you're going to win three championships, it's going to be goofy like that. But when you hear the wins tallied up against the losses, it's like the 1984 Tigers or the 2021 Giants. It is, you know, just like so mind-blowing. And you forget about all these elimination games, and Giants fans aren't strangers to this kind of stress. They've woken up quite a few mornings thinking about, okay, it's win this game or the whole season is over. It's been, pretty successful for the Giants. I don't think Giants fans can complain too much.
Yeah, no, Giants fans cannot complain too much. However, they just might. Some of them will, believe it or not. But as we're setting up Game 5, our last podcast record was on the eve of Game 3. And I think our sign-off was, when we talk to you again, either it's going to be one game for all of the rally enchiladas, or it's going to be the Giants season is over, or it's the Giants have slayed the dragon and they are on to the NLCS. And of course, we got the outcome that I think we all probably could have guessed, which is this. Of course, this series was going to go to the maximum, to Game 5. It's been just a battle of attrition between these two teams all season. So we've talked about, Game 4 obviously didn't go their way in LA. They chased Anthony DeSclafani, the bullpen. Gabe Kapler made a billion pitching changes to try to hang on to that game and keep the Giants within striking distance. And I think he did just an incredible job of doing that as his relievers struggled to throw strikes. But ultimately, there was just they didn't have enough firepower to come back in that game. But Game 3, I think, is going to be also remembered as a pretty iconic one with the 1-0 win, Brandon Crawford making the leaping catch, and with the final out basically being blown back by a Candlestickian wind off the bat of Gavin Lux, who still is probably trying to figure out what happened. What was your take on the final out of Game 3, Grant?
Okay, I suppose it is story time, but yes. Okay, so Gavin Lux hits the ball, and you can tell he got into it. He put a charge into it, and so I stood up. I'm at home. I'm wearing my comfy slippers, and I stand up. And again, people don't believe me, but I'm not necessarily a fan anymore. I am a fan of, A, I had what I was going to write like all outlined out. So I was definitely a fan of the Giants not wasting all that work. But also, I was just like into the game. It was exciting as all heck. And so I stood up, and then I crept closer to the TV one step, and then I could see Duggar, stop, settle under it. And I just took three quick steps toward the TV, and whoop, my feet went out from under me. I landed on my elbow. I broke my elbow because of Gavin Lux hitting the ball. If he just hit a little dribbler, man, I am typing fine. If he strikes out, I am just none the wiser. But he had to hit that ball, and my elbow fractured in the process.
So, obviously that had to be very painful, and I hope you're in less discomfort now. But you still filed a story. I mean, how the heck did you do that?
Look, I was able to write a story that night because I didn't know it was fractured, so I was able to ice it. I was able to use both hands because I didn't have a cast on. It didn't feel great, but I was able to do it. So it was not outstanding. And I think the part that I haven't shared on Twitter that is one of the sadder and funnier parts is that the reason I slipped is because I was wearing slippers, which, haha, that's very literal. But it's also the slippers, the bottoms of them, the tread, the traction was all worn off because I don't think I took those things off of my feet for an entire pandemic. They were fine at the beginning of a pandemic. And then I just walked around the house for a year or, you know, 14, 15 months, whatever. And then I didn't realize it, but they were like glass. And so my wife saw, like my wife was right there. She was watching with me and she didn't think I was acting like an idiot. She didn't go like, gosh, calm down. Oh, great. Now you've done it. It was just sort of like a whoop. And, you know, she laughed because it was like, haha, you must have slipped in dog pee, which would have also been funnier. But no, they just went out right from under me.
Yeah, I think all of us probably need to invest in a new pair of slippers. We've probably all worn the tread off our pad house shoes. So in the morning, I guess it was still sore, I would imagine. And then you went to get checked out?
I woke up and you can just tell. It's like, okay, I can't bend my arm. Yeah. And so I walked my daughter to school. And I live really, really close to a hospital. And so I just walked straight there from dropping my daughter off. X-rays, all the good stuff. And yeah, it's a tiny fracture. And it was never in that much pain. Like, it was never just like a shattered elbow. It was just not fun that night. Knew it was bad in the morning. And since, like, everyone asked me, like, oh, what kind of pain meds did you get? Wink, wink. And it's like, nah, I forget to take my Advil.
Right. That's how
inoffensive it is. So
I think that you just need to write the rest of your stories about Brandon Belt, since obviously he's got a fractured hand, you've got a fractured elbow.
Or Max Muncy.
Or Max Muncy. But yeah, that's true. You've got the elbow thing going on. I just, you know, it's funny. I know that your reaction wasn't one of an excited fan, but excited fans reacting to something big happening on TV, there are actually quite a few instances of people hurting themselves. I mean, it's more common than you'd think. And I know this because, you know, when I wrote the Band of Misfits book and was doing a lot of book appearances in 2011, there were multiple people who came up to me, including one guy who showed me the scar from where he'd had surgery because he tore his ACL in his knee jumping off the couch. And you know, he put like a giant's tattoo over the scar. These are things that actually happen to real people. Maybe some of them even athletic people, not necessarily unathletic people. So I would say I feel your pain, but my elbows actually feel pretty good right now. So I would just say I have a lot of respect for your ability to soldier on and type with one hand the rest of the way.
Dear letters to Sports Illustrated, I never thought it would happen to me, however. Oh, man. Yeah, it was. Look, it's funny. All you can do is laugh. I'm glad it wasn't my right elbow because that would be a logistical nightmare. You know, it's not exactly easy. I will say that Apple has built-in dictation features, and that makes my life a lot easier. I'm not going to be able to use it in the press box without everyone wanting to throw me out the window. But, you know, it has made it easier, except, and if you are listening, an Apple executive, the difference between pictures and pictures, like, you have to be able, there has to be a way. I have tried like saying it with a French accent. I have tried saying pictures and it's always pictures. And that's gonna be the end of me, because I'll tell you, I used the word pictures quite a bit in my game.
On all of our Zoom calls all year, we've used a transcription app that, you know, does AI, and some of what they come up with is just hilarious. It's like Mad Libs, especially if it's Erwin Higueros with a player who speaks Spanish trying to figure out what they're saying, because it's obviously only trying to figure out what you're saying in English. It just ends up being just an enormous word salad, and sometimes very, very funny one. But I will tell you, now it's my moment to be a little vulnerable, because I also had an embarrassing incident after game three, and I want to share that because I feel that you've shared your moment, so I'll share mine. So, you know, it's really hard to try to get people one-on-one after these games, and you know that what we do, we're not necessarily looking for the canned quote, you know, so we can, you know, ram a story in before deadline. We have a little time to consider and to write, to craft a little bit after these games, and I like to try to get, you know, my own material as best I can. So after Brandon Crawford walked out of the interview room, he had to go across the field to get back to the Giants dugout and go up the tunnel to the clubhouse. So I intercepted him out there, and I really wanted to ask him, you know, we know his backstory. We know there's the photo of him in the San Francisco Chronicle as a little five-year-old. You know, we know that he grew up going to games at Candlestick Park. And I just thought with the windy conditions, and he made the play of the game to save it, you know, just it was like the first ever playoff game the Giants played at Dodger Stadium, and the place turned into Candlestick Park. And I just thought that was such a cool thing to explore. And I wanted to ask him what his Candlestick memories were. And he gave me just a great quote about how, you know, as a kid, you only remember the good stuff. I remember, you know, just how much fun it was to be at a baseball game. I know the adults talked about trash flying around and the wind and how cold it was, but that's not what my memories are of the place. And so I get him, and I know I've got like 90 seconds to try to ask him a question and get this answer that I'm hoping for. And I get my question out, and he just looks down and he says, you've got something on your pants. And I had been eating nachos, dear listener, during the game. They have lovely free nachos, and apparently some nacho cheese escaped one of my chips and landed on my black slacks, and I had not noticed it, and there was a big gob of orange nacho cheese right on my pants. And so I said to him later, I said, thank you for that lifelong memory, a game that none of us will ever forget. You make the big play. I've got this evocative notion for what I want to write. I've got like 90 seconds to get a quote from you. And you point out I've got nacho cheese on my pants. So, yeah, that was my shining, shining moment.
That is good. That is good. And he has such a good dry sense of humor. That's a player you'd want to have that experience with. I will say, if I had to choose between the broken elbow and the nacho cheese on my slacks, I think I would go with the nacho cheese on my slacks because I would also be getting nachos. I think, the Dodger Stadium nachos, I've had them. They're not bad. You know, it's once you got that nuclear cheese on anything, it's pretty good.
It's probably some form of melted polymer. I mean, it's probably not really food, but, you know, it does taste good. I don't know what they do to it. Yeah, no more nachos for me. I'm swearing off the nachos for the rest of the season. And maybe I'll also, like, I don't know, put down more napkins the rest of the way. You never be too careful.
Yeah. Are you a pickled jalapenos guy?
Oh, yeah. The more the better. Yeah. Yep. I love the pickled jalapenos. I think you just need to have some in your fridge at all times.
Yeah. No, I agree. I have pickled green beans. They're called jalapenos, and they're pickled green beans, and they have like jalapenos in them, and they're super spicy. And they seek them out if you are a pickled hot person like I am. Seek them out.
I am staring right now at a pumpernickel rye bagel with some cream cheese and some smoked salmon on it and some pickled red onions. And I'm just staring at it. And the second that we are done with this podcast, I will inhale it.
All right. Well, let me just try and stretch this on, see how much patience you actually have now. All right. Forget it. All right. Well, predictions. Predictions. I think predictions are silly. I don't want to make them. I feel jinxy. So do you think it'll be close? It's got to be close, right? Do you think it will be decided early? And by early, I mean sixth inning or before, or do you think it will be decided seventh inning on?
Oh boy. I think that's probably the only thing I want to predict is that it's going to be decided late, because that's just the way everything has gone. That's the way everything, the whole season has pointed to, you know, this changing on one pitch or one play really late in the game. There's been so little that separated these two teams, even though I think we all know that the Dodgers have the talent edge with the established everyday stars. The Giants have the value in the sum of their parts, and they've at no point has either team really outclassed the other. And the Dodgers have had more success, in games where they've been able to, kind of walk away and make it a little bit easier at the end. But their overall run differential in this series is certainly favoring the Dodgers. But in the regular season, it was only two runs that separated the two teams over 19 games. So I'm just going to predict it'll be close at the end. And I think if the Giants win, they're going to have to hit a homer with somebody on base. And that's probably going to be That's probably going to be an ingredient that they're going to need if they want to win.
This is the one prediction that I will go with, and I will actually disagree. I get these vibes like that 2012 NLCS Game 7 going back to some other games where I don't think this one's going to go down to the wire. I think for whatever reason, I don't know, I just have this feeling like it's going to be big runs early for one team, almost like Game 162 with the Giants against the Padres, and there might be a couple of moments where you're thinking, oh, if there's a couple bloops and a blast, Team X will get back into it. But I don't know. I have a feeling that it's not going to be that dramatic, which means, oh gosh, it's probably going to be dramatic.
Well, that would be courteous, the courteous thing to do, to give you more time to write if the outcome is kind of, you know, resolved early. I mean, if you have a broken elbow, that's probably what you need.
T, backspace, capital T, H, E, space, capital G, I, A, NTS. Yeah, no, I'm getting good at that. All right.
Pictures.
Oh, God, the pictures. All right. This has been episode 170 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. We'll be back on Monday. Are we going to be talking about the end of the Giants season, or are we going to be talking about, like, what happened in the NLCS? That is bananas. It just keeps going like that. So we'll be back on Monday. We'll see what we're talking about. See you then.